You're listening to the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast with Chicago attorney Dave Scriven Young. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 260 of the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast for July 16, 2020. My name is Dave Scriven Young, an attorney from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll be your host. This podcast takes you on a daily journey to discover key principles in the areas of marketing, sales, and leadership for attorneys. What follows is audio from last night's Lawyers Emotional Intelligence Book Club. You can join our discussion every Wednesday night on social media. You can find out more at facebook.com/lawyersEQ. I hope you enjoy the discussion. Welcome to the Lawyers Emotional Intelligence Book Club. My name is Dave Scriven Young, a lawyer focusing on litigation, environmental law, and construction law from Chicago, Illinois. We're helping to create the next generation of lawyers with high emotional intelligence through a weekly book club and daily practical posts at facebook.com/lawyersEQ. During our book club discussions, we'll do a deep dive into books that will help us develop emotional intelligence skills and specifically think about how we can begin to use these skills in our law practices. I will be live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for this discussion, and it is a discussion. Please liberally use the box below to ask questions or to make comments. I don't sit here as an expert. On the contrary, I'll be learning along with all of you, and I'm really interested in hearing your opinions and observations. So I look forward to learning from all of you as well. So welcome into the book club. So glad that all of you can join us today. And let's go into our material. So, and if you could in the comments, let me know, you know, where you're from, what you're excited to be hearing about today. Again, we're going to be talking about breathing and meditation. So if you've had some experience using meditation, if you use a nightly or daily meditation, let me know that as well. And then we'll be going into our discussion. So for those of you who haven't watched this show before, a little bit about me. I graduated in 2003 from DePaul in Chicago. I'm senior counsel at the law firm of Bakar and Abramson. I practice civil litigation, primarily business disputes, and also do some construction law and environmental law as well. My mission is that I try to identify and share historically correct knowledge and resources, and hopefully in an inspiring and entertaining format, in order to help others meet and exceed goals and standards in every area of their lives. And so I do that in a number of different ways. Of course, this show being one of them, focusing on emotional intelligence skills for lawyers. I also do a daily podcast called the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast, where I talk primarily about marketing, sales, and leadership. I also, you know, with that, I go live every day at 8 a.m. Central to talk about, you know, the material for today, which usually is basically a live version of a podcast. But I also take legal questions from the public as well as mentor young lawyers. So if you're interested in any of that, you can join me online on social media, typically on Instagram, Facebook, Twitch, and Twitter at AttorneyDSY. And then I have a YouTube channel as well. If you just search for my name, you'll find that as well. So awesome. So let's just talk about, you know, what we talked about last time. We're in the self-management part of our emotional intelligence skills. We're discussing the stress illusion by Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. And we've done a lot of things. And today is sadly, our last book club discussion of this particular book. We've done a lot of things. So as you know, Dr. Chatterjee sort of breaks up stress into four different categories, one being purpose, where we talked about how you can use affirmations, reframing, so taking what's happened to you and looking at it in a different way, gratitude, so having a daily gratitude practice, scheduling your time, to add a little bit more of the things that you want to do in your life, as well as doing some morning routines, and then how to live more. So doing the things that you love, doing things with intention, as well as, you know, having a vision for your life, and then looking at who you're engaging with and engaging with people. We also talked about relationships, in terms of a sense of touch and how that can de-stress you and how nurturing relationships can help you as well. We have talked about the body category, which means how the things that you eat and things that you put into your body really can either make you happy or can make you stressed out. And then we had a great discussion about sleep and resetting your rhythm. Then we took to the mind category. We talked with Ian Hu about technology overload and how to avoid that technology overload. And then finally, we talked about how to bathe yourself in nature and how nature can take a lot of the stress out of your life as well. And we talked to Laura O'Sullivan last week. So let's get into what we're going to be talking about for today. So we're going to continue, obviously, with Dr. Chatterjee's book, The Stress Solution, and we're going to continue the mind category, and we're going to talk about breathing and meditation. So let me introduce our guest for today. Our guest for today is Jeffrey Bunn. Jeff is a founding member of the Mindful Law Coaching and Consulting Group and a retired litigation attorney. He is a regular meditator trained in the Vipassana tradition and schooled in mindfulness-based stress reduction. Jeff was the initial vice chair of the Lawyer's Assistance Program, Illinois Task Force for Lawyer Wellbeing, and among his many speaking engagements, he led guided meditation sessions for the American Association of Law Schools, the ABA Women in Litigation Section, as well as the State Bar of Nevada. So let's meet Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good evening or afternoon, wherever it is, everybody.
Bye. Exactly. So before we get into the content, I just want to say hello to some of the folks that are watching in. I see that Brian is in, Jamie is watching, as well as Reed. Mr. Spears, welcome to the show. Bernie is watching, welcome. A friend of my son's who does Taekwondo. As well as Kathy, and I'm sure Charlie and Henry are watching as well. So welcome, everybody. And as we go forward, Jeff, I wonder if you could just talk about, I know that your bio says, you know, obviously you do, your business is the Mindful Law Coaching and Consulting Group. I wonder if you want to talk a little bit about what you do in that practice.
Well, the purpose of that organization is really to advocate for and help the men and women in the legal profession in particular, incorporate meditation, mindfulness into their practice, not in a religious way, but in a very secular way. How can breathing or meditation, which you all are talking about, which are two of my favorite topics, can they be incorporated into our practice, the legal practice? My answer is yes. I'm going to talk a little bit about how, and that's really something that I kind of stumbled into myself, and thought, boy, it would be a really great thing in terms of stress management, which we all deal with, and that's what that organization is really founded to do. So, you know, it's funny talking about the. You had sent me a particular chapter where Dr. Chatterjee, who's a really, the guy knows his stuff. I know you all understand that well. I just want to affirm that. And in terms of breath and how it can relate to meditation, I don't know if something he said or I read someplace else, but like the ancients, they knew that things like breathing were working. They just didn't know exactly how. And one of the things I really enjoyed about this book in particular is it gets into the science of the how. You know, how breathing can make a difference, how it acts, how it reacts. And he makes the observation in his book, which I had not heard before, but it's so obvious. It's like the first thing since the moment the doctor smacks and every moment in between, we're breathing. That's what it's all about. And it's so automatic. It's so simple. It's so something that we're used to doing without even thinking that it seems that it's easy to overlook. It seems like it's not worth examining. I think it really is worth examining. And I applaud you and all your readers for spending a little bit of time trying to do that. because one of the things that Chatterjee says is breathing is about information. For all of us in our lawyer minds, give me that information. And talk about
absolutely.
With specificity of your listeners or you who may be into yoga, you understand that we are taught to breathe through our nose. That's what the nose is for. A lot of us resort to consciously or unconsciously to mouth breathing, which is not nearly as effective, nor does it serve us as well. Mouth is. Nose breathing really does.
Well, that's great. I think that's a really great transition into what we're going to be talking about for today. And I think I can think of no one better than you to help us have that discussion. So let's talk about just taking the time to breathe and why it's so important. Dr. Chatterjee says there's no quicker, more effective way to reduce stress than breathing. And breathing, of course, encourages, full oxygen exchange. So it helps us to help with a variety of conditions like pain, depression, or stress. And the funny thing is, we breathe automatically, right? But there are some things that prevent us from breathing properly. And I think, Jeff, we can talk about this, but there's a lot of things that I think we do as lawyers that, prevents us from breathing properly. One is, of course, being, hunched over a computer, wearing tight trousers or skirts, and continually, holding our bellies in so that we don't look, maybe bigger than we are. It affects our breathing, of course. We're not able to take, deep breaths in and continue with that if we're continually to hold our bellies in. It looks like we may have lost Jeff for a minute. Hopefully he will come back in once he hops on. I see him now. Oh, there you are. Okay, perfect. So, we were just talking about, some of the things that we do in life, especially in our practice, that prevents us from breathing, properly, being hunched over a computer or wearing tight clothes and that sort of thing. So, are there other things that, prevents us from, taking in that full breath as we're working?
Well, a lot of it is the psychology of the moment. If we're talking to somebody like a judge or a senior partner or a work peer that we feel we have some kind of particular relationship with, that the stress or psychology of that moment can also be every bit as much of an inhibitor as a physical restriction like clothes, other situational kind of things, visual things as well. One of the things that really struck me about Chatterjee's book, though, and I have to say though, is as much as he's into the science and the specificity, which I think is fantastic, I was really surprised that he didn't talk at all about the vagus nerve, which you or some of your readers may be familiar with. Vagus, not as in like Las Vegas, it's V-A-G-U-S. The vagus nerve, which goes, and I'm not a medical doctor, but it goes from the brain stem down through and touches upon our heart, our lungs, ends up down in our gut. And vagus is, I think it's Latin of that nature, which kind of describes the way that the vagus nerve works. Vagus nerve is really key to the operation of our nervous system. And for a lot of the people that are guests of yours, viewers of yours, they will likely have heard of the fight or flight syndrome. And the vagus nerve is a big part of the fight or flight syndrome, which is, of course, how do we react What's the physiology of the moment? And not surprisingly, getting back to what you're talking about tonight in terms of the book, deep breathing can directly impact the vagus. The vagus nerve is sending all the physiological information that gets us all jacked up and very kind of hijacked, so to speak. And breathing, which is not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a visual thing that other people get, but it's a way of kind of like, it's like, I'm here, it's all good, just calm down. And the old wisdom of take a breath, is actually quite compelling and quite real.
Yeah, I love that.
And, you know, we...
Yeah, I think...
we can use that too in...
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, we can use that in every day in our practice.
Absolutely. I think, we'll talk a little bit more about this. But I think that, part of it is, I think, in terms of meditation, and we're actually, Jeff, you're going to take us through a meditation as we get later into this program. And I think it's really important to remember that I think there's a couple of different things going on, as you touched on. One is, just in terms of what, how we respond to things. And meditation, I think, really helps us with that as well. But in terms of, the breathing, and Dr. Chatterjee talks about, as you said, the information that our body receives, that, and we've talked about this, viewers who have been watching the show know this from, from the very start, that our body is receiving information from everything that we get, whether that's, what our relationships are like, what our sense of touch, is or is not, how much light we're getting, natural light or light off of our phones. And breathing is the same thing. So if we're breathing quickly, if we're not taking deep enough breaths, then our body is getting information that, hey, we must be in a very stressful situation. So a lot of things are going to occur. He actually talks about these, spy neurons that checks our breathing. Mm-hmm. So if you feel stressed out, you're going to breathe faster. And the brain notices that things aren't going well. If you're breathing more slowly and deeply, you're actually going to give your brain a signal that you're in a place of calm. So, Jeff, I mean, tell me if this is right and if Dr. Chatterjee is right. But essentially what he says is you can kind of fool your body. If you're in a stressful situation, you actually can fool your body and your brain by, having some of these deep breathing exercises.
Absolutely. And especially for women and men, listeners of yours who are lawyers, we're all a little bit of a control freak. There's that piece of our personality. And we need to, and when we're in a situation where we feel like we're not in control, we need to have some strategy, something specific that helps us at least think that we're getting control. Putting our arms around the situation, like kind of like the coronavirus thing. We can't stop it, but we can kind of, nip around the edges. One of my great favorite sayings of Jon Kabat-Zinn, who brought meditation from the East over here, was we can't stop the waves, but we can learn to surf. The waves, the bad stuff, the things that are going to set us off, the stressors, fill in the blank. I mean, you could write 100 different descriptions for what the waves are. The waves are just going to come. There are some strategies, stop the waves, block the waves, control the waves, but that's not what I think meditation is about. Certainly not what the breath is about. It's like recognizing that those will come, the waves will come, but we got to learn how to surf. We got to learn how to deal with these things. And just like the breath, it's the most simple of things, almost too simple. We spent 3 years in graduate school, law school, 4 years in undergrad, being taught without actually anybody ever saying it, that if it's not complicated, it's not significant or it's not serious. Actually, things that are very simple, like breath, can be a tremendously helpful tool for dealing with stressful, complicated situations.
Yeah,
it's just true.
No, that's complete. That's completely right.
And you know,
yeah, I think it's funny, and that's why I started this, you know, emotional intelligence book club, is because I, you know, really saw a gap between, you know, what law school teaches lawyers and what lawyers really need to know. We have a comment that came in. This commenter is really excited for this topic. She uses a guided sleep meditation. You're so right, Jeff, in that we have to adapt to the circumstances. And, you know, we go through law school and we're stressed. We have, you know, our normal practices and we're stressed. And, you know, now we're facing this coronavirus and adds even more of a stressor. And so breathing and meditation is something that can really help us to adapt to those circumstances to the extent possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I view them just as tools. I think that's the right way to look at it. It's not a panacea for everything that ails us. Breath is not, meditation is not, but it is a tool that can help us. And the more we understand about it, the more we talk about it, hopefully the more we can begin to use these things, because they're really so incredibly simple. Not easy, simple, but not easy. But, you know, understanding that the simplicity of it ought not be a turnoff at all. Quite to the contrary, the simplicity of it is of breath or meditation is something that should be embraced and used, because I do think that, you know, taking it down and dealing with stress is going to help all of us be better people personally and better lawyers professionally. It just stands to reason. It's kind of common sense.
Absolutely.
I think it's wonderful that you are spending time doing this.
Go ahead. Yes. No, that's great. And so let's get into sort of, you know, the tactics of it, because I think that's what most people are here for. We know that, you know, deep breathing and meditation is helpful, okay, but let's get it more into, you know, some of the nuts and bolts. So, you know, how do you breathe properly? Dr. Chatterjee sort of gives us a framework on how to do that. And he talks about, you know, the diaphragm and how you want to fill your diaphragm with air. You want to breathe through the diaphragm, fill the lower lungs with air, and you, the way that you should do it is your stomach should pop out, right? You don't want to hold it in, let it pop out.
Exactly. Our vanity be damned. It's true. It's absolutely true. When you know, and of course, if any of the men and women who are listening are into yoga or have ever done a yoga class at all, they'll understand that one of the things that a yoga teacher, any teacher will teach you when it comes to breath is, where is your breath? Find your breath right now. Is it shallow? Is it up high in your lungs, or is it down low? And are you extending your abdomen? Are you breathing, you know, in and out with your nose, not your mouth? And this is something that a lot of people have a kind of misconception of, because it's contrary to a lot of things like fashion. But the idea is, if you're sitting, can you, again, coming at it from a position or a perspective of, can you actually use these techniques to your benefit? Sitting at a table, in a courtroom, it doesn't really matter. You can, take a moment, and in that moment, take a breath. And nobody's looking to see if you're how you're breathing. The abdomen is really the key here, is to practice using your belly, using your abdomen. And even though it seems counterintuitive, and it's not like we're all taught to kind of suck in the gut and, you know, wear the fitted shirts and all that other stuff. But, and that's fine. If that's what one wants to do, then go for it. But I think there's room enough for our abdomen and our stomach, to give us a little bit of breathing room, pun intended. You know, while we're
love
at
that.
it, while we do what we do.
Yeah. So yeah. So breathing. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, a couple of the. So again, in terms of specificity, a couple of the things that Chatterjee talks about in his book, the idea of box breathing and nadi shodan, which are two of the different techniques that he gets into a little bit. And the box breathing thing is real easy to learn, and it's real easy to figure out, and it's easy to remember, and it's also easy to do.
Well,
all you got to remember is number
yeah,
four.
We'll get into the tactics of breathing, and I want you to actually go through some of those in a little bit. But let's go into sort of. So we know that deep breathing is important, but then breathing with your nose, I guess, is very important as well for a number of different things. You know, I don't. You know, some people, you know, breathe with their mouth, some people breathe with their nose, but breathing with your nose is extremely important for, you know, trapping dust and pollutants and ridges in your nose, control humidity of the air, enzymes in your nose kill viruses, adenoid glands actually produce immune cells that fight infection. Your breathing is actually more efficient and results in an increase in the amount of oxygen that you take in by 10%. Breathing with your nose, also helps your brain cells to communicate, improve sleep quality, reduce inflammation. And, you know, Jeff, in terms of, you know, breathing in your nose or your mouth, in meditation, are you typically breathing in with your nose, or what happens there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I'm sitting in meditation, in my tradition, which we'll talk about in a little bit this evening, is Vipassana. Vipassana, the anchor that one uses to rest one's attention, is the breath. It's the most common anchor that most people that have fiddled around with or read about meditation will be familiar with. You wouldn't get into that. There's a whole other conversation there, but it's definitely, again, getting back to the breath as an anchor, is you're always going to use your nose. And I have found it much easier in a kind of controlled environment, for lack of a better way of putting it. If it's like a yoga class or meditation, I prefer seated meditation. That's just my preference. But it's easy. It's much more difficult for me. In the course of a normal day, I find myself prone in some situations to kind of fall back on to remind myself. It's like, you know, you need to practice, basically. And the old saying, practice makes perfect. Well, forget about being perfect. But practice is going to encourage us to do things that we ought to be doing. And there's a lot of science to back up. It says it's the better way to go about it. And just follow that. Follow the information.
Great. Why don't we have you go through some of these, you know, different ways to breathe, you know, different, you know, practices. He has, you know, breathing practices, yoga practices, alternate nose breathing and nostril breathing and meditation. So, Jeff, I don't know where you'd like to start, but if you want to take us through some of these. And I encourage folks who are watching, if you have specific comments or questions about meditation or breathing practices, or if there's something that you find particularly interesting, please let us know that in the comments. And as we go along, as Jeff takes us through some of these, I'll read your comments and we'll have a great discussion. So Jeff, if you want to just take it away and we'll go through some of these strategies.
Sure. Super. The book, I think, is very specific. And if people really care, if you spend a little bit of time reading and practicing, you can get the hang of it. It's not all that tricky. Again, getting back to it, it's something we do on autopilot our whole life. The idea is, it starts really with a question. Can one benefit by purposefully or intentionally doing something that we just otherwise do, the body does kind of on autopilot? I think the answer is yes. And like a lot of things, it's like physical fitness. I think mental fitness and breathing would be somewhere in the middle of physical versus mental. You know, fitness is something that comes, you know, it's not, if you go to the gym once for 15 minutes or half an hour, nothing's going to happen. Breathing, meditation, just like pumping iron or running or swimming or whatever one chooses to do, to really receive the benefits of the practice, whatever it might be. You have to kind of stick with it, and you have to make it a priority. I think a lot of that, not to digress too far from what we're talking about, is we finally figured out that physical fitness is what we need to do. We got to get up half hour earlier and go for a run or a swim or a walk or whatever we do. I think if we choose to practice breathing or practice meditation in that, if we have that kind of half hour-ish window, instead of going for a run, I'll just use that as an example because it keeps coming up and it's easy for me to tap in for 30 minutes. I'll just run for like 25. And while I'm cooling down in the morning, this is time. It's a habit I've created. It's time I've set aside. Just take a little bit of that time and put it to a different kind of use rather than whatever the physical exercise might be. Practice your breathing or practice a little bit of meditation. And that's how you can begin to kind of fit that into your day. Anyways, getting back to the idea of breath, I think doing it intentionally, doing it purposely definitely helps if you stick with it. If you do it just one time, one off won't do it for you. And some of it sounds kind of silly. The idea in the yogis have been about forever. They talk about the word, which many of your listeners may be familiar with, pranayama. The pranayama is the breath. There are lots of different techniques to kind of channel the energy that comes with the breath. But the idea, again, is this is something that you do. What if you do it intentionally rather than just kind of do it mindlessly? What if you do it mindfully? And there are two exercises that Chatterjee talks about that I'd like to just like run through very quickly with you and your viewers. And you can talk about the others. But the idea of box breathing, which for me is like so basic, but it's also very real. And the Nadi Shodran, which is the alternate nostril breathing, is a little bit more exotic. It's those two things aside, if we have is, you know, 5 seconds in at various points in our day to just take one deep breath and just take it down, just chill out. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. So I think one should not be given to understand that there has to be a complicated regimen or practice, which some of these practices may seem. It can be just take a deep breath. Dude, back it off. Take a deep breath. Another one of my favorite sayings is, it comes from a guy, Viktor Frankl, which you or some of your listeners may be familiar with. He was I think an Austrian psychiatrist. And he said many, many, many things. Read a great book, The Search for Meaning, which is not necessarily emotional intelligence 101 for lawyers, but it's really, it's just so there. But what Viktor Frankl said was, between stimulus and response, there's a space. It could be a nanosecond. It could be just a little, but that's what breathing and what about is it for me, finding that space, maybe trying to expand it a little bit, because in that space, we choose to respond, not react. And insulting or hurtful or it makes angry, we're going to react in a way that's pretty predictable. And it's most often the case that with a little bit of reflection, a little bit of space, we kind of reflect and think, oh, boy, I wish I hadn't said that, right? And say it that way, whatever. So things that can help us find that space, you know, buy us just a little bit of time to reflect, exercise a little bit of judgment, to respond rather than react is a good thing. And I think that's a lot of what breathing is all about. In addition to the physiology of it. So the box breathing thing, as Chatterjee says, it's a great technique. And it's one that the Navy SEALs include in their regimen and teach to their soldiers. As you're about to, it's like one of those things, I don't know if you saw, you guys have all seen the movies, Saving Private Ryan, when they're going, the boats are going into the beach, and just before they drop the doors, you can hear the bullets boom, 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 hitting the front as the gate goes down. What do you do in that moment? Because you must be plenty, there's a lot going through your head. Box breathing is a way to, you know, just give yourself a chance to, whatever the situation may be, take your body's anxiety and the stress of that situation out of the equation or minimize it and give yourself a fighting chance. So box breathing is about the number four. It's all about 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And as Chatterjee says in his book, so it's about, let's do this like all together, just to play around with it. If you're sitting down, try not to slouch back in your chair. Sit up kind of straight and breathing in. 3, 2, 1. And hold it. 3, 2, 1. And then let it out. 3, 2, 1. And just it's in, hold it, out, hold it. And it gives, it's to me very comforting, it's very calming, but it also is a tool for saying to myself in my body, I mean, I got a little bit to say about what's going on right now. There's something I can do if I give myself a chance to do it. Yeah. You know, how many times have we had an oral argument where you said, oh, boy, I wish I should have said that. Well, you can if your mind is racing and your body is thumping and you're hyperventilating and all those other things are happening. It's no wonder. It's a miracle that you would get anything out, let alone all the stuff that you wanted to say that you forgot to say. But if you have a way of, you know, kind of regaining control of yourself a little bit, you're more likely to say or do things that you might otherwise neglect. The other technique that Chatterjee talks about is really tough because there are different hand gestures that people who are yogis that go to are into yoga. There are people who believe in mudras, which are the different, you know, the most common mudra is the you know, meditation mudra, where you're holding your middle finger with your thumb. But there are, gosh, I don't know how many mudras there are. It may get a little bit beyond what some people are into. That's okay. But for other people, it's a reminder of a certain quality or a certain intention that they want to pursue. And if it's working for them, it's great. But with the Nadi Shodra, Shodan breathing technique, the mudra is one that eludes me, shall we say. But I'm going to give it a go anyways. So the idea is your ring finger and your pinky finger extended, your two other fingers are bent and controlled, and you have your thumb. So the idea of it, again, Nadi Chodron is about, you got it. So you can do it. You're a natural, Dave. the alternate breathing thing is if you close one nostril with your thumb. So your right nostril with your thumb. And you're breathing, so your left is open and it's in. It, again, count to four is kind of recommended. One, two, three, out, two, three, four. And then you move it over. So your right nostril is open. And you're using your hand, the mudra. In, two, three, four, out. Two, three, four. These, the mudra for me is not to overdo this. Everybody can do this at their own way. There are lots of different breathing techniques too. But the idea of the mudra again is just a reminder. And as the point that Chatterjee makes in his book is somewhat counterintuitively, the alternative, if you need a little boost of energy, a little kick, or if like right before you're going to bed, you want to take it down. These seem to be two different things, but I guess the intention is what really drives the result. What it is you're going for. And again, the idea, the practices are reminders. So a lot of times if you know you need to kick it up a little bit, these are the technique as well as the mudra is a way of reminding oneself that that's what you need to bring the A game. You need to kick it up and get it there. Or if you need to take it down, it's just a way of reminding yourself and also settling into that intention. If the idea is to kick up the energy, then as you go through these practices and these different breath techniques, you're more likely, the thought is, at least as I understand it, to actually do that, to engage in that. Similarly with, the sleep thing. Those are the two very obvious. I think probably the box breathing thing is the most obvious technique that one can. You can play around with, you can read about it, you can talk to people about it. There are any number of things, or you could just ignore it altogether. In meditation, I don't, in Vipassana, the idea is not necessarily a structured breath, it's a deep and continuous breath, so it's in and out. In a natural way, some of these techniques, like the box breathing or the alternative nostril breathing, might be a little bit regimented or forced to achieve a particular goal. Whereas in meditation, there are other things happening, and the breath becomes, at least for me, more of a natural thing. It's not a forced thing that's on account of four or what have you.
Yeah. Let me cut in real quick and just remind people that if they have questions or comments, just to write them wherever you're watching in the comments box. The thing that occurs to me is, I love what you said about, either getting ready for an oral argument or maybe even after something happens to you that's bad. You can use these in either way. However, what it comes down to, I think, is practicing what works for you. There are a few different things that a few different techniques that he has listed in his book and that are on the slide. So I would encourage people just to choose one and to try it out. And if you don't like that one, choose another one and try to do it, I think, on a daily basis, even for a few minutes, just so you kind of have it down, you have a practice down. So when you're faced with a stressful situation, you can use that practice to your benefit, because it's not really going to work, I don't think, if you get into a stressful situation and then you're like, oh yeah, what did that guy say about breathing? You really want to have a technique down. Yeah, you want to have a technique down so you can, when you're in a stressful situation, it'll be a rote thing that you'll know what to do. And Jeff, I wonder if, because we're getting a little short on time, if you can move on to the meditation practice and tell us a little bit about, you know, like how you got into meditation, and then also if you can, you know, take us through, one of your, short meditation practices, so we can get a sense of what that's like for people that haven't done it before.
Yeah, and thank you for watching the clock too, because I am notoriously bad. And the very short story for me was, I used to be, because I was in commercial litigation. It's the courtroom practice. It's the high stakes. It's the crazy clients and the partners that are over the top, and all of that stuff. And my cure, or my way of dealing with that, the stress, was going for runs. I was like one of those kind of type A, hit it hard kind of guys. And I got an injury, and I couldn't run anymore because of a knee issue. So I started doing a board of trade building. There was a studio, a guy who used to trader there, who decided, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to start doing yoga. And he was a wonderful guy. But through him, I got into meditation. He pulled me over after a class one day and said, you must be a meditator. And I said, I don't know that. He said, well, you should. And he gave me a couple of retreats and people to talk to and get to know. And I thought about that for a couple months, and I thought, what the heck? What I found out was, of course, it's the rest is history, is the end of the story. But what I found out was that initially, for me, it was kind of a right brain, left brain thing. I thought I was just weird. The left brain was my law practice, and for an hour a day, I would go exercise my right brain. And then I began to realize that actually the right brain can share an awful lot with the left brain. And there are a lot of things we can practice, and a lot of things we can learn from, things like meditation. Forget about all the associations and everything. For me, it's all about self-regulation. What meditation really helped me with is dealing with thoughts, dealing with emotions, dealing with moods, dealing with situations in ways that I was not particularly skilled at dealing with them. And like everything, apropos of what you were saying before, what we were talking about with breath, it's something that you need to do often. But if you get to the point where, in terms of kind of muscle memory, it's just the way that we function and we react, we think, it can help. So meditation, the big takeaway for me was the self-regulation thing, being able to recognize, kind of be curious about, examine it, and then let it pass and realize that I'm not that thought. I'm not that emotion. The thought is very real. The emotion is very real. I mean, those waves are coming, but that's not me. And they will pass. Some things linger or come up again and again and again because of the person, place, or thing that we're dealing with, the situation. And that's a whole nother conversation. But the idea of learning to create a little bit of distance, find that space, helped me a bunch, a whole bunch. And if one of your listeners is talking about lead meditation, there are lots of different ways to meditate, lots of different traditions. And in the interest of time, I won't get into that. But I find that a lot of people are interested in knowing that meditation is not one thing. There isn't a right way or a wrong way. There are many different ways to do it. There are a lot of different ways to skin the meditation cat. And there are probably 20 plus traditions that if anyone cares to get into, they can. Same with postures. You can be seated in a chair. You can be seated on a cushion or a zafu, meditation cushion, cross-legged, your legs straight out, kneeling benches. Some people are into standing meditation. Some are into lying down. Some are into moving meditation. A lot of people have referred to yoga or tai chi or things similar exercises as that as moving meditation, which is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And I think all of to understand, again, apropos of Dr. Chatterjee's point and the point that you just made, weakest things and kind of pick and choose. Now, there are some purists that would take issue with that. I'm not one of them. For people who, some of the purists who would accuse us kind of secular laymen of accuse us of cherry picking certain benefits and leaving out certain typically more kind of religious or philosophical things, let it be. That's what it is. But I'm about not doing that. I'm about trying to figure out are there any secular benefits that I can gain from a practice? What kind of practice works for me? What kind of time? What place? How much time? When? All of these things are a matter of personal choice. And I think a lot of people start off, as I did, with the misapprehension that there's only one way to do it. And it's really quite different. Very much as you say, fool around, read up about it, talk to people about it, find out the different kind of ways, and find what works for you and when works for you. So what have we got timing wise here? Another 5 minutes?
We have about, you know, 7 minutes until the end of the hour, but we can definitely go over. But if you want to, you know, take us through, you know, like a short, okay, you know, 5 minute meditation, I think people would find it interesting, because you're right. I mean, there are so many different practices. And I guess what I would recommend is maybe just trying one that, taking us through one where, you know, just an easy sort of beginner's one. So if people want to ease into it, that might be something good for us to do here.
Okay, that's easy. So we're talking about different, there are different traditions. We're not going to discuss those now. We're all kind of sitting in front of our computer. So let's work with our chair. Just as there are different traditions and there are different postures, all of which you'll fool around with, there are different kind of anchors too. The anchor that we're going to use tonight, because it's part of my tradition, Vipassana, is the breath. It's also happens to be what we're talking about. But one can choose a mantra, which is what transcendental meditation is a lot of times. It could be a sound or it could be a word, typically something that doesn't have a meaning for you, so your mind doesn't get caught up in the meaning. It could be a chant, silent chant. So it would be more than one word. And even you could have, if that's working for you, a melody in your mind. It can be a visual thing, which is typically kind of nature. It could be a mountain. It could be a lake. It could be a candle. Something the whole idea of an anchor, which is just a term that is very common among meditators, is a place of focus. And it's a place where we choose to rest our attention, because the attention is always going to be just like we're always breathing. The attention is part of what our mind does. Our mind thinks thoughts. So let's so our anchor for tonight, for right now, will be the breath, if people will indulge me. And again, remembering, the idea is not to blank the mind, but rather to observe the mind. Rather than repress thoughts, what I like to suggest is we do like a very simple kind of thought meditation, and then follow that up with a couple observations about why we do that. Because I think I mentioned to you previously, one of the things that used to make me crazy was on going on retreats. I have these wonderful sits, and then when they're done, they're just done. People are gone. And there was the lawyer part of my brain who would always want to know, well, why did I do that? Why is it working? Why, you know, the why thing. So we'll talk a little bit about the why, but I think it's a lot about, again, self-regulation, especially with thought. So let's just do a quick thought emotion or thought meditation rather. And what I would first of all encourage everybody, just get comfortable. We're all sitting, feet on the ground. Not slumping back using the back of the support of your chair, but kind of sitting up. So the idea of sitting not stiff but erect is to open up our belly so we can breathe, and you know, put your hands pretty much anywhere you want. I think if you know, wherever is comfortable for you. And if you're comfortable, closing your eyes. And the reason I think why people close their eyes is to just kind of deprive. It's one sense that we can minimize or eliminate. And then just first start breathing. Find the breath. As I said before, where is your breath? Where's your breath right now? Is your breath shallow? Is it up high in your lungs? If it is, then why don't you work on trying to take it down into your abdomen, down into your belly. Think about some of the things that Chatterjee has mentioned in his book. Think about breathing through your nose. And just think about relaxing into the space where you are right now, because there's nothing else that you have to do. I would suggest that for right now, try observing our thoughts. So let's take this moment to think about our thoughts. Now, of course, the most obvious thoughts are, what am I doing here, sitting in front of my computer with a bunch of people who I don't even know, and some guy who's rambling? Let that thought come. Recognize it. Observe it. If you have any curiosity about it, be curious and let it pass and return your attention to our anchor, which is our breath. And where is your breath? And as we locate our breath, our mind will continue thinking thoughts, because that's what minds do. Maybe again, we're thinking about the obvious things, the situational things, but are there thoughts about other things that are behind those obvious thoughts, below those obvious thoughts? If in this situation we can do that, let's watch that thought. Let's be curious about that thought. Where did it come from? Why am I thinking it? But let it go. Not let it go in a way that says, I don't care. It's just letting it go. We are not our thoughts. It's our mind thinking our thoughts. Let them pass and return, begin again. Return to your anchor. I should have brought my chimes with me to bring us all back together, but I didn't. I forgot my chimes.
Oh, that's quite all right.
But I think everybody gets the idea Breathing, a little bit of me time, just whatever's in my mind. And sometimes, if again, getting back to the lawyer thing, if it's an argument I'm making, but it becomes more of a contemplation, which is okay for me. It's okay too. I wrestled early on with the idea of the thoughts that come up, and I watch them. It's the old kind of circle game. They keep kind of the same thought, and here it comes again. And oh, but I'm coming back to my breath. And oh, there it is again. And after two, three, four times, all of a sudden I realize that's what this it's going to be. It becomes more of a contemplation than a meditation. And I fought that for the longest time. And but then I realized that's kind of foolish. I mean, the mind is going to do what it's going to do. So if I'm going to say hello, start watching that movie. If the movie is a movie I've seen, Groundhog Day over and over again, okay, I'm just going to watch it. Isn't that curious? Isn't that interesting? Why? And at some point, it'll come back. But the idea of meditation is, for me, a lot of finding the kind of me time, finding out what's going on, because there's always something going on. And Dan Harris, who you or some of your listeners may be familiar with, likens the returning to the anchor as like doing a bicep, it's a bicep curl for the brain. That's the idea of coming back to that anchor. Let the thought come up, observe it, let it pass, and bring it back. That's the bicep curl. And if you keep doing it, that you create that kind of muscle memory. There's a lot more to it than that, but for our purposes and time constraints being what they are, that's really what it is. It's really good. Try it, check it out, guys. You will like it. And as you keep exercising that muscle, the muscle memory will be there and solace in that. And again, to me, the idea of that is. And I don't know about if anybody else has any ideas, is the idea of learning to let things pass, even things that I'm interested in, instead of holding on to them, because that's part of what I want to do, and it's part of what we're trained to do, is just kind of letting it be. We're not that thought. We're not that emotion. A lot of people would argue that emotions are thoughts. They're the same kind of, it's just a bubble of energy. And it's energy that controls us if we let it, but we can, at least for the moment, we can control it a little bit. And part of it is by letting it run its natural course. And that then helps us the act of continually letting things pass and not, glomming onto them and catastrophizing and thinking all the worst thoughts helps a lot. In heated exchanges with opposing counsel or judges or whomever, clients, to me, just being able to let go and not be owned by those things
Yeah, I love that.
is very important for you.
Let me ask you a couple of sort of rapid fire questions here, for because I know there are things that I've tried meditation in the
Sure.
past, and since you're the expert here, I wanted to ask you a few questions, and then people who are online want if you've tried meditation and wanted to ask a question, or if you have never done it before and wanted to ask a question, you can put those in as well. So the first question that I have for you is, when I meditate, the biggest problem that I have is falling asleep. So how do you avoid falling asleep when you're meditating?
Don't do it. Although, some people would say if you're falling asleep, it's because you're tired. And far be it from me to say maybe you need to take a nap. Maybe that's a good thing. And whatever is happening, if you're into the whole sleep REM thing, that's a whole different world. But the practical gotten from people is just it's basically changing your And sometimes what it means is just stop doing what you're doing. Get up, you know, get a drink of water, get a cup of coffee, walk around, stretch, do whatever. Maybe just sitting is not what you need or want at that moment. It might be tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow will be completely different. But maybe for today, maybe a kind of a walking meditation kind of thing. Get up and, which I used to do quite often.
Think we might be losing Jeff on the internet here. Yeah, I think we're oh yeah, we lost Jeff. I think what he was going to say is to try a different form of meditation, like a walking meditation and the like, which I think the moral of the story, as we can kind of wrap up, is that there are so many different ways of meditating, and that you know, certainly if you're interested in learning about meditation, just investigate a few different ways, see which way works for you. Let me just bring, I think Jeff is back on.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Perfect. But yeah, I think your point is very well taken. You know, sometimes you need an app, sometimes you need to change your posture, sometimes you need to change the form of meditation. So that's good as well. The other question, you know, a question that I've always heard is, you know, you talked a little bit about the spiritual and religious practices that go along with meditation. Do you have to believe those things? Do you have to actually engage in those religious practices? Or is there a non-religious practice of meditation that you can do?
I think so, yes, absolutely. For instance, what would be like a religious belief, like reincarnation is the obvious thing. Do I believe in reincarnation? No, I do not. I don't, it's secular, it's not religious. So for some people, meditation is a piece of a larger, religious practice. And I think that's wonderful. That's great if it's working for them. But I'm not a particularly religious person. That doesn't mean, however, that meditation doesn't have benefits that can serve me or that I can enjoy as well. And I women and men to, you know, experiment, find out for themselves if meditation works, even if they're not religious, because it's not part of the package. You know, a lot of the other things that I kind of think about and thought was, you know, practical tips. How do you do that? How do you involve that in a law practice? And again, time-wise, I want to be respectful of everybody's time here, but I can think of two instances that are real easy. They're kind of no-brainers. I have a 2 o'clock call with Dave. I don't like Dave. He's a jerk. And also, the thing that we agree on. Hey, you know, those kind of conversations are like, oh, you know, if he's calling, I have to pick up the phone. I didn't want to pick up the phone. I didn't want to make the call. Now what I do is I just obsess about, I'm going to say this and Dave's going to say that. And then I'll say this and he'll say that. And we don't even need to have the conversation because I've already played it out in my mind. What I do now is I had a kind of a sign. I had a conversation with my admin, and I said, if I come out of my office, I give you the sign, and I close the door, and I hit DND. If you would need Don't be surprised if you find me sitting. I had a Zafu cushion in my office. I said, you know, so 10 minutes before that 2 o'clock call with Dave, rather than and work myself into a lather, I would sit, you know, take it down, try and think about something pleasant, try and think about something completely otherwise. Because I was prepared. Lawyers, by definition, that's what we are. We're prepared. Same thing with, you know, and speak for itself. Same thing for like going to court. If I had a contested motion in front of a judge, I had a 10-minute walk to court instead of playing over and over and over in my mind the arguments, try to actually think about either something else unrelated that's pleasant, to whatever nature you can find in a major metropolitan city. Find it. Listen to your footfall, the smells, the feels, whatever. That, again, seemed kind of counterintuitive. And it was a little bit like, for me, the first time when I had a closing argument in front of a jury, stepping out from the counsel's table without my notepad, without my notes. It felt like I was jumping off a half of the concrete below me. But you know what? You need to do that. And once you do it, it's so liberating. Same thing for innovation thing, the walk instead of obsessing. Think about something different. And then let the know what you want to do. So it's really about taking little moments of you, just to be with you. Even if what you're thinking is ridiculous, then let it be. That's what it is. And if you have time to sit down and have a more kind of formal, that's good. That's great. That's not the only way. There are lots of ways this can't. If there's anybody else that wants to chime in, if there are any other questions and answers specifically, I'd be happy to answer them. But
you know,
just go for it. You're doing it, man.
Yeah, I don't see any other questions, and I think we're running out of time right now. But Jeff, this has been, really incredible, and I wonder if you, before I sort of get to, you know, preview of next week, for folks who wanted to find out more about meditation, if they wanted to contact you and your coaching and consulting practice, what would be the best way of people to reach out to you?
Go. I'll give my email. My direct email is better yet is the Mindful Law Group. If you search that, I don't know the address is search for the Mindful Law Group. You'll find more about me. You'll find out about mindfulness, meditation. Are they the same? Are they different? How? Why? Whatever, and why. There are a lot of why questions there that I ask myself, that I assume that you all ask yourselves as well, if you care. And you might accept, or you might just say, that's a bunch of baloney. I'm going to go off my own way and find my own explanation, find my own reasons, find my own ways. And that's a good thing.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a treat, man. It's a delight to encourage, as I know you are, in your webcast to and find out these things, because exactly. It means a lot.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for sharing. And so let me just move on to sort of what we're going to be doing next week. As I said, you know, we're going to be this is our last session with Dr. Chatterjee's book, so it's sad to say we're going to be leaving this material. I think that it's given us a lot to think about over the last few weeks, and a lot of different things that we can do to when we're stressed out, we're feeling stressed, or we're going into a stressful situation, like Jeff said, things that we can do, some real practical things. So next week we're going to be talking about a new emotional intelligence skill, which is you know, the eternal question of how do I stop brushing off people when something is bothering me? The emotional intelligence 2.0 recommended action is, you know, taking control of your self-talk. And we're going to be diving into that through the next book, which is Nonviolent Communication by Dr. Marshall B. Rosenberg. So what we're going to be doing next week specifically is it's just going to be a solo show. I'm going to be coming on, just sort of introducing the topic and you know, going through some of the recommended actions from Emotional Intelligence 2.0, and then introducing the book as well. The following week, I'm actually we're not going to have a show because it's going to be I'm going to be on vacation, 20-year anniversary with my wife. So we're not going to have a show that week. But then the following week, we're going to have a more fulsome discussion of the first chapter. So what I'm really hoping is for anyone who's interested in coming on the show and actually going through some of these practices in terms of finding out, you know, how to communicate better, how to, you know, when you're upset, you know, what do you do, how to communicate your needs and your wants. That's what we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks. So if you're really interested in coming on the show and participating in a discussion, please reach out to me and let me know. Again, I'm on all social media channels at Attorney DSY. So thank you so much for being on the show. Jeff, thank you. And just remember, everyone, that emotional intelligence is necessary for all lawyers. And we can learn these skills together. So thanks again, Jeff. And thanks, everyone, for coming on the show.
Night, Dave.
Thanks so much for listening in. If you weren't able to join the live version of the program, that's okay, because there's plenty of ways to join the discussion. You can leave me a voicemail by going to anchor.fm/attorneyDSY and hitting that message button. You can leave me a comment for me to play on the show or a question for me to answer. You could also leave me a comment or question on social media. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at AttorneyDSY. I'm also on LinkedIn on my personal profile, so let me know if you have any comments about this episode. Tell me what you think about this podcast or give me a topic you'd like to hear about. This podcast is on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, and Anchor, so please be sure to subscribe and rate and review. I also want to invite you to the next session of the Lawyer's Emotional Intelligence Book Club. We're going to be starting with Dr. Marshall Rosenberg's Nonviolent Communication book. The next session will be Wednesday, July 22nd at 7 p.m. Central. You can find out more at facebook.com/lawyersEQ. Have a great day or night, and remember to fight for the lifestyle that you want and become the rainmaker that you need to be.